So here's my dilemma.
Okay.
I went through the drive-thru the other day, and they got my order wrong.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Dan.
And you're listening to Conversations in Community, where we talk about the dilemmas of life,
the ups and downs of living in community,
and hear stories from real people.
I went through the drive-thru the other day, and they got my order wrong.
They got your order wrong?
Yeah.
Like, how did they get your order?
Well, like, stuff was missing, and I'm not one of those that get a receipt. Do you get a receipt? Like, if there's two windows, do you always get a receipt? I never get a receipt.
I don't as much as I used to.
Okay.
I used to be a receipt guy.
Man. Yeah, I don't. So I don't have any proof that, like, this is what I ordered. So I just leave it. I'm just like, well, they got it wrong. Oh,
and
well.
And when did you discover that the order was wrong?
When I got home.
So you don't check, like...
Oh,
there's like, kind of a rule in my house, and I violate it. It's you got to check the bag right when
they hand it to you at the window. You check. I never open the bag. That bag does not open until I get home. Like, they hand me the bag and immediately goes in the passenger seat or whoever is sitting in the. I don't even give even if there's my wife with me. I don't give her a chance to look to open it.
But she would probably want to look at it, right?
Oh, yeah.
You kind of
She'll start, but what? I don't wait. I just start driving.
So what is there? Is there anxiety about waiting?
Oh, yeah, the clock's ticking, man. You get the bag, you have like 5 seconds to start driving your car, especially if there's people behind you.
Oh, so you're worried that the people are...
You can't be wasting time looking. Did they get my order correct? Especially if you had a big order, too.
That's true.
Because flip it, right? Let's say I'm behind somebody who gets their bag. In my head, I'm like, one Mississippi. To Mississippi.
Really?
And they're not moving yet.
Man,
and then I
realize you have such rules.
And I'm like, come on, let's go. We got 16 people behind me. Let's go. Move it. So yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this. If there's no one behind you, do you still leave immediately?
Oh, I don't know. I think, I can't even answer that. I don't even know subconsciously if I would do that. I think it's just ingrained in me to just bag as acquired.
And you go.
And I am going.
And you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. Sometimes I'm, like, rolling as I'm grabbing the bag. Like,
yeah.
Like I see them open the window, and my foot is off the brake, bag gone.
Well, so, it is kind of awkward if you do stay there for a while, because the person kind of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the person at the window doesn't know what to do, because they're holding the next person's order, right? So now they're just staring through the window, holding the next person's order. Like, what? Are they going to move?
Okay.
Have you ever gone back?
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me? I can't,
you're brave.
I cannot seem to get the order right. Like, when either I order it wrong or they just don't get it right. And then I come home, and usually it's kind of like, why didn't you stop and look at the bag and make sure everything was right? And I just, you know,
So you go back.
I trust them too much.
So you get all the way home and then you go all the way back?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how far. But usually, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I do mess it up quite
now,
a bit.
I worked at fast food for like 4 years, and every day we would have people come back, and we didn't think anything of it. We were like, oh, I'm sorry, here you go.
Okay.
So you'd think that would transfer.
I think it's the most hilarious thing you will
can't.
So if you get home, you won't take stuff back.
Oh, no.
Like
if something is missing, I paid for something that I don't even have.
I'll be like,
well, that's the Lord's way of saying, you didn't need a Big Mac today.
What if literally you left and 2 seconds later you realized, I don't have that item? Like Sonia looks or whatever and says, I don't have that item.
If Sonia's in the car with me, I would probably go back.
Okay.
If I'm alone, I'm not. I won't do it.
Because the pressure
of
going back in. Yeah.
It's just too much.
You know what I find amazing? That you're a pilot, that you're in charge of hundreds of people and this plane, and you can't go back in and get something.
You know, I wish that there was something relatable with those two, but there's not for some reason. I don't know why. But I'll tell you this. I went through Culver's. This was a while ago.
Okay.
And there's only one window, but you pay, and then like you pull forward, and they bring the food out to you.
Yeah.
Well, we get to the window. I hand the lady my card.
Okay.
And for some reason in my brain, I was like, cool. I did it. I paid. And I just drove forward and I never got my card.
Oh.
So I pulled forward to the location and I'm just sitting there. And then my wife, Sonia, she goes, wait, did you grab your card? I'm thinking, no, I did not. And so I look in the left mirror of the car, and I see the lady just kind of poke her head out holding my card. I was so embarrassed. I have not been back to that Culver's.
You won't even go back there.
I have not been back.
Because
nope.
You've had an experience. Nope. And clearly they've got your picture on the wall. Yes. And they're saying,
they're like, this guy.
Watch out for this guy.
This guy right here. Yeah.
He's going to leave his card. So don't serve him.
Yeah. Drive-thrus and me don't mix. I won't take food back. I won't send food back. I won't go back. Whatever they hand me, that's what I get.
You are interesting. I will say that.
Welcome back to episode 5.
That's right, episode 5.
Took a little bit of a hiatus. It's kind of my fault. I started a new job. Down in Dallas, been training.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, that happens. Life happens sometimes.
It does. Yep. What's been going on in your life, though? I feel like I haven't seen you in a while.
Man, let's see. Recently, what's happened recently? I had to actually go out of town last week. Had a little bit of a family health thing, emergency with a parent, and so headed down to Florida.
Okay.
And I took a flight. Yeah, I love Spirit Airlines because I can book the same day. I got a $90 plane ticket to Florida.
But then you paid $140 for a bag and $90 for...
Yeah, true story. True story. One time, I actually, they allow a personal item.
Yeah.
One time I went down to Florida to visit my mom and stuff, and I packed everything into my computer laptop case. All my clothes and everything, and it was a personal carry-on.
Wow.
Paid nothing.
So free.
Yeah.
That's a cheat code.
I felt like I ripped them
Spirit,
up.
Spirit, don't be listening. Don't be listening, Spirit.
But not this time. I did pay for the carry-on. Yeah. And they do get you for the carry-on. But when you're paying $90,
I was
going
to say that. I mean, that's still nothing.
The closest one was $400.
Especially for a direct,
for the same day?
It's a direct flight, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's even better.
Yeah, I love it. So anyway, it's a challenging time that way to...
Everything okay though?
Yeah, we're getting there. Okay. We're figuring things out.
Good.
Yeah, how about you? What's been happening?
Well, as I said earlier, I started a new job. Mm-hmm. Been down in Dallas last couple weeks training, learning a new airplane, all that fun stuff.
Is it warm down there? Did you get out?
It is warm. Yeah, so the where I'm training at is equate it to a college campus, but for like training, for pilots and flight attendants and training.
Yeah.
And it's just that, I walk to the building that I go to, to class, I call it, Sonny's like, oh, you're going to school again. I'm like, yeah, I know. But it is nice weather down there. It's like 60s and 70s. Beautiful.
Oh, that's
beautiful.
So nice.
My type of weather. So yeah, I just walk to the building there and back and don't have to take a shuttle.
You're training all day long?
Yeah. It's like an 8 to 5 type thing. And then homework, I'm using air quotes.
Okay.
Homework at the end of the day.
Okay.
And that's actually what I'm doing right now on my time off. I'm actually off until Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Yeah. But
yeah,
I have
that'll be good.
A bunch of stuff that I
got
to do, though. Learning new airplane systems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that fun stuff. But
Got to
get done. I'm excited, though.
I'm amazed you do that.
Hopefully this is the last big job change of my career. So hopefully. Fingers crossed there. Oh, man. Well, it's good to be back. Hey, as part of this podcast, we've mentioned this before. One of our goals is to talk about our small group families.
Mm-hmm.
We hinted that a little bit. Dan, you and I used to be part of a small group family together.
Yep.
You can unpack that a little bit more. I know you got something prepared here.
Sure thing. Yeah. I guess in the past, we've kind of looked at why small group community is important, how it kind of started, why it's essential. And last time, we actually talked about unity and the fact that Jesus... He wants that and even prayed for our unity among his followers. And, to be unified in a small group family, it means we got to learn to lay aside the differences that sometimes cause division so that we can see clearly and we can pursue Jesus and each other. And man, that just requires so much intention and grace and forgiveness because it's hard to be unified and we're going to mess up in our journey to achieve unity. The other thing it's going to require is deep honesty about ourselves with each other, which is what I want to kind of unpack a little bit today. I think in order to really grow as a small group family, we got to learn, everybody in the group's got to learn to come consistently as they really are in the realness of who they are and what's going on in their lives. That's very challenging because the Bible's pretty clear about who we are and our condition. there was a prophet in the Bible named Jeremiah, and he described the heart, and he said this about the heart. The heart is deceitful, it's guarded, and it's prone to hide. So when a small group family starts, when they come together at the beginning, you got a group of people there whose hearts are just bent towards hiding their true selves. And if that mindset kind of continues or doesn't change, we're not going to really function any differently than the world we live in. We're going to wear masks with each other. We're not going to really show who we are. So how do we deal with the heart condition that each of us has? We've got to work on cultivating an environment of grace and trust and honesty. We have to learn to take just risky steps of putting our true selves out there. We can help each other do that, though, and we can help each other by drawing each other out. In the book of Proverbs, it talks about the heart and the fact that it needs to be drawn out. I did an exercise one time. You probably remember this, Brian.
Oh, yeah. I was actually going to bring this up.
Yeah. I asked the group. I said, all right, we're going to do an exercise. I want you guys to draw me out. I want you to just keep asking me questions about how I'm really doing. And so they began to do that, began to ask questions. And I proceeded to answer the questions as honestly as I could. And things went deeper. And we started to get into like things that I didn't even know were there. Like I'm learning things about myself as we're doing this. And it's starting to get a little uncomfortable as I'm talking about how I'm really doing. And I'll be honest, I kind of wanted to stop, because it's just a fact. When you engage your heart with others in a real way, it's kind of unnatural. It's unnatural in our world, and it's risky. But they were helping me find out what's going on in the inside and unpack how I'm doing right now. At our church, we talk about three levels of honesty. Level one says, this is how life is. So when we're asked about how we're doing, we can make general statements. Life's hard. Yes, it is. Relationships are hard. It's a level we can all agree on. It's a pretty safe level. Level two says, this is how I've been in the past. When we're asked about how we're doing about a particular topic or an area, we can look to the past. You know, in the past, this is how I handled that and overcame the situation. It's a little bit deeper, but it doesn't really address how we're doing right now. And groups can remain at level one. They can remain at level two. What's harder is moving past that, because level three says, this is how I am right now. This is how I am right now. When we're asked like how we're doing, we answer in the present. Here's how I am. You know, my job is hard right now. It's unfulfilling. Or, you know, my wife and I, we haven't been talking much. Or I'm losing the battle with pornography. I'm struggling right now. Or, man, I'm really carrying real anger with my mom or my dad. These are hard things to talk about. But we carry things like this. And if we're going to love each other and walk in unity, we've got to be real and honest. The big problem in all this is the door to our hearts. The door to honesty is always, it's like a door that's closing. You know, you open a door and it comes back and you got to push it open. So this is going to be a battle, being honest with each other, but it is so essential to something God wants to do in us. He wants to transform us. And we're going to talk about that next time. But if you're in a small group family, I want to encourage you in this. Before you head to your next group, pray. Maybe even outside, stop in your car and pray and ask God to help you to live honestly with those who are in your small group family. I think if the group commits to do that together, there's going to be some incredible transformation as God's Spirit meets our open hearts. With that, let's move on, because we got a great interview today, right?
We do, yes. We do. Yeah, we're talking to Georgia.
Yeah, she's an incredible lady.
Yeah.
She's incredible.
Again, another person that I've interacted with many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew next to nothing about her.
Yeah.
So that's what I love about this.
Okay, so here's Brian's interview with Georgia.
I'm here with Georgia. How you doing, Georgia?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks. I'm doing better than I deserve.
Oh, you know, people tell me that all the time, and I've never thought to say that. I'm like, man, that's a good expression.
So one of the most amazing surgeons that I've ever worked with, Dr. Weber, he's retired now, but he always, if you asked him, it was his standard answer, better than I deserve. And he truly matched that humble, like that statement, yeah. Really. It defined who he really truly was.
Better than I deserve.
And so it's like one of those things that stuck with me.
Yeah. I heard.
And I know a lot of people say it, but he like lived it.
Yeah. I heard a guy one time say, I'm on the right side of the dirt.
Yeah.
And it took a little bit for the pin to drop for me to get that. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. I know what he's saying. But
that's sort of funny. My stepdad used to say that until,
yeah.
Until he wasn't.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Well, I'm going to start off. So I've interacted with you many times.
Yes.
I've talked with you many times.
Yep.
You interact with my wife all the time.
All the time. One of my best friends.
I hardly know a thing about you. And that has been a theme throughout every episode so far. You seem like such a forgiving, gracious, kind person. Where does that come from? Like, were you raised that way?
So I'm going to be very honest. Some of that, I think, is just how God made me.
Okay.
And I've even questioned that myself at many times in my life. Times where that, and I do have a kind spirit. I have a very forgiving spirit. And I think at certain times in my life, bad things happened. And I was like, well, if I wasn't nice, if I wasn't forgiving, this wouldn't have happened. And I wrestled with that. I really did, especially in my 20s and 30s. Until I really, truly, and it was, I can't even say that, like, once I was truly saved and really understood that relationship with God, because I was in the world of religion most of my life.
But like raised, you were raised?
With multiple religions. So oh, okay. I had this concept of God and good and bad, but it was mostly ritualistic. It was repetitive. It was a show that you put on for other people.
Yeah.
But when I finally truly, and I honestly don't believe I really truly got saved until I was pregnant with my first daughter.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was even coming to LCC. Well, no, she was the reason I came to LCC. I'll get to that. But there were these times that I really wrestled with this nature that God had bestowed upon me. And I was like, why did you make me like this? And I wrestled with that until there was a point in time where I actually even left LCC for a couple years, and I struggled because I had gotten divorced and I was going through a period of life. And then I finally came to just, it wasn't just one event, but it was a series of events. And I felt like God was like, I need you.
Yeah.
The reason I made you this way is because there are these people that are so misunderstood and they feel like they're not worthy because of their past or because of decisions they've made. And there was just this point in time where I finally just reconciled, like, this is who I am. And it comes with consequences at times. And it's not always easy, but it's easier than when I wrestled with, like, trying to be someone else.
Yeah.
And once I like kind of realized, hey, this is who I am, and this is how I made. And because people would even, good people, would they be like, why are you so forgiving with your ex-husband? Why are you? And that was hard.
Yeah.
At times, and I'm like, well, because God commands me to.
Yeah.
And then I finally realized, like, He gave me this nature. Like, you know, people think of like their gifts, their spiritual gifts, and we always think, oh, I'm an artist, or I'm musical, or I'm, you know, I'm a great preacher or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that I'm a good listener and forgiver. And that was, I didn't see that as a spiritual gift.
Were you raised that way?
No.
No? So like, where did that come from though? Like that's such a beautiful heart to have.
I think it's just, it was just in me. I think God just made me that way, and I can't express, like, I'm not even sure where that came from, but it came from him.
So then what was your childhood like?
So my childhood was actually quite tumultuous. So I mean, when I was first born, it was pretty normal. My dad was a Marine. He was serving during Vietnam. He was stateside, or kind of like in friendly territories. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be here. But I was born on Camp Lejeune Naval Base, and my mom and him were, you know, I had an older sister.
Heard a lot of commercials about Camp Lejeune.
Oh, yes. I'm on the list. I'm in the registered list in case I get cancer, you know. Okay. My name's on the list.
Yep.
So he was in the military serving. He and my mom were high school sweethearts. You know, she had been captain of the cheerleading team, and he was this, like, really cool tech guy. And, of course, you know, Vietnam happened. He went in. So on the surface, they appeared very normal. And, you know, my mom had gotten pregnant with my sister, so they got married. But it wasn't, like, on the surface, it didn't look different from any other family in America. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of abuse that I think both my parents had suffered.
Like they were abused.
Yeah, they were abused.
Their upbringing, maybe.
And when you got under that surface, there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of lying. There was a lot of secrets. And it was extremely dysfunctional. And so, but when they were in North Carolina, I think it was probably when I talked to my parents separately, they both agree it was the happiest time in their married life. But unfortunately, my dad decided to come back home. Which, ironically, my whole life I thought my mom was probably all for it because she's very close with her family's very close knit, but very dysfunctional at times.
We all are a little
bit. Yes. But I think that's where a lot of the abuse occurred. And later on, I found out from my father, like, she didn't want to come back. She was very happy there. And he's like, sometimes I think if we would have stayed there and I would have continued my military career, things would have been. But we moved back and. That was when the chaos really started. And when I say my parents fought, we had cops at the house.
Like you mean actual fighting?
Actual fighting.
Not just the verbal yelling back.
House got shot up one time.
Oh my
gosh. And I don't mind sharing these things because all the people in my life that I'm speaking about are different people. And I've kind of asked their permission, like, hey, can I talk about this? No, my dad's not really proud of it, but my dad had he was this super calm, quiet, nice guy all the time. He was like the fun dad, but when he blew his top, he blew his top. Mm. And if he drank alcohol, he was an angry drunk.
Did you have any siblings?
Yes. So my older sister, and then we had a younger brother once we moved back to Toledo.
Okay.
And that's where my mom's family was from. So there was lots of fighting, lots of alcoholism. My father was having affairs. My mom... she was very, very angry. and she had a lot of right to be. I mean,
like angry because of your dad?
Probably because of my dad, but also because of just her situation. We weren't rich. We weren't wealthy. We were probably doing better when he was in the military, and so we were struggling. They had a house. Mm-hmm. They had bought a tiny little house in Toledo, but every night there was like a fight. We were either like perfect picture family on the surface this day, and then the next day it's like we were the talk of the town.
Was there like a common like theme that caused it, or like a common denominator that?
So sometimes I think, you know, my mom had a lot of, she was always comparing herself with her family, I think, in certain instances. And so when we weren't up to par with that, she would get very angry. And my mom repeated a lot of the behaviors that she grew up with. So my sister and I were pretty harshly abused, like physically, mentally, emotionally. When she would get angry, she would take it out on us. And looking back, I know she loved us, but she had no control over that anger. And even sometimes I think in her mind, when initially it started, she had a reason to correct us, maybe. But then it always just morphed into this thing that had nothing to do with us. Or it was just like rage coming out of her because she's just unhappy with her life. My mom's family they were very ethnic Polish neighborhood. They grew up, and like you did not spare the rod at all. That was a normal thing. Like if you were at your neighbor's and you guys did something wrong, your neighbor would beat the crap out of you. And then you got home and your parents beat the crap out of you because the neighbor had to spank you, you know. And when I say there's spanking and then there's beating the crap out of you.
Yeah.
We got the crap beat out of us at times.
Now, how old were you?
4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So my sister and I, had a really hard time.
How old was your sister?
She's 3.5 years older than I am. So.
Okay. What is your relationship? And you said you had a brother too?
Yeah. My brother was an infant and he was spared some of these specific years. I hope so. Because then my parents finally decided to divorce.
Okay.
And it's, you know, early '70s, or mid '70s, I'm sorry. And so that was a big deal still. Like when, and so, you know, at my school, I had a kindergarten teacher that could not stand me simply because my parents were shameful because they were getting divorced. And so she would like single me out sometimes in the classroom and pick on me literally just because my parents were getting a divorce.
What in the world?
And, you know, that was kind of shameful in the neighborhood. And I don't even think sometimes my dad was really aware of all of this. You know, and I blame my dad, you know, my dad did things wrong. He had affairs. He drank too much. But he himself also was struggling with, he'd been in the war, you know, or he'd served during that time. You know, he lost a lot of friends. He himself, you know, I've heard many stories, not until I was an adult, about his life growing up. You know, he was born in West Virginia and then grew up very, very poor. So they got divorced. And
how old were you when they got divorced?
7. I think I was 7 when they split up, so. Maybe 8 when it was final. But my father moved to Georgia, and my mom stayed there. And we were with my mom for 1 year. And then, I mean, it could take forever. We don't have time to talk about that. Yeah. But I ended up with my father. My father ended up with all 3 of us.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was very unusual for the 1970s. But it happened.
What did you want? Do you remember?
I wanted to be with my mom.
Okay.
There were some abuses that happened from my grandparents or from my grandfather on my mom's side of the family that I had suffered, and my sister and her side of the family, you just didn't talk about it. I remember trying to tell my mom about it once, and I got the crap beat out of me and told I was a liar and all, you know. So there was a lot of pain there. And so when my dad moved to Georgia, despite knowing that my dad could drink too much and he had affairs, he was safer. He didn't hit me. And so I wanted to be with my dad. And I saw him kind of as this larger-than-life hero because he took me out of that. But not to say that when we moved there, life was hard. Yeah. I mean, my mom never had to pay my dad's support because you just didn't do that in the 1970s. Yeah. That was just like it didn't happen. Yeah. So he was raising 3 kids on a, you know, entry-level income. But he always made sure we had a nice house, and he always made sure, and I shouldn't say nice house. People think of nice houses in Hilliard. They think of like Muirfield.
Yeah.
We had a house.
You had a
We had a roof. We didn't own it. We rented it, but we had a bedroom and a roof over our head. Didn't always have electric. Didn't always have a phone. Sometimes we didn't even have water. We didn't have a refrigerator for 2 years. Like we learned that you could like put a cooler down in the ground and it'll keep things cold for a long time. But we always had, and he was, it's sort of funny. Like we always had a protein for dinner. We always had a starch, a vegetable, and a salad with oil and vinegar. I never ate so well in my life as when I was in that time of my life.
Now I'm assuming he worked.
He did. And he worked a lot.
So were you, because you said you were 7 when
so my sister and I,
you guys just stay at home?
We were latchkey kids. Yeah, we were the true definition of, like, we were the OG latchkeys.
There we go.
And so, we kind of parented it ourselves, which always didn't go well. My sister and I, and it's sort of funny because we were taken out of that, like, hostile fighting environment, but my sister and I already had some of those behaviors imprinted on us. And so my sister and I would fight. Oh my gosh, we would fight. We would get into the dumbest fights, but it would turn into, like, not once, but maybe 3 times we had the police called on us by adults who were afraid to intervene with us because we were just like,
wow,
throw down.
Wow. You know?
And so it wasn't like this. We had good moments, though. There were good moments. There's always good moments, even in times that seem like literal chaos. There's always good moments. Like we had an amazing Christmas. We would always have, we had this Christmas where this like stray dog came on and I was like, I'm, you know, crying to my dad, can we keep this dog? And I mean, we're talking, it was a lean Christmas. Like my brother got this cool belt and, mm-hmm. and belt buckle, and my sister got a mirror with a brush set, and I got a Holly Hobby bedspread, which I hated Holly Hobby, but I wasn't going to tell my dad that because it was the thought that counted.
Yeah. You had something to unwrap.
Yes. And so we all had something, but it was very lean. And we had made our own Christmas ornaments, cut down our own tree. But this puppy just, and my dad's like, we can't keep it. We can't have a dog, and going on and on and on. And so, you know, we go to bed and I'm just broken. I wanted this puppy so bad. And we had gone around the neighborhood to see if anybody owned it, but it was common out in the country area where we were that people would just drop off puppies. Mm-hmm. And like 1 a.m, I wake up and I go out and my dad's sitting there with the dog and he's cleaned it. And he's, so we had a dog, you know. And
I would have wept.
Oh, I weep even still when I think about it, because it was a special moment. So, you know, there was always good times even in the bad.
Yeah.
And my dad did try hard. I remember learning about sacrifice in that moment, because I remember my dad always dressed nice, but I never realized, like, I found his boots one day. He would always wear, back in the 70s, going into the 80s, men would wear, like, these half boots that would zip up. They were like dress shoes, but you could wear them with jeans and casual, but he wore them all the time. And I remember I got him out one day because I thought, I'm going to clean him for him. And I realized my dad had been stuffing like cardboard and newspaper into his boot because there was holes in the bottom. Mm. He would not buy himself anything. Mm. He would just make sure that we had food and went to school. Yeah. And, you know, and we got a refrigerator eventually and things like that. So, you know, life was just up and down. But now, at that point in our lives, we really didn't have any religion per se in our lives. So when I was very little, my mom's family from Toledo were Catholic, and we were pretty strict Polish Catholic. And you went to church on special Sundays. We didn't go every single Sunday, but Mass was important. And I remember going to catechism classes and doing all that stuff and learning. I learned about God, but none of it made sense to me, truthfully. I learned, the responsorials. You know, priest is going to say this, and you say
like
that.
The bulletin. You had the bulletin mm-hmm. that you read.
Yep. We say the Apostles' Creed at the beginning. Like mm-hmm. I knew the process and the ritual, but I had no idea. I really didn't even know about the apostles, mm-hmm. which is very weird because they're very, very apostle based, you know. And like I knew who these people were, but I didn't know who they were, not until much later. And then we moved to Southern Georgia, where everybody was like mostly Southern Baptist, and that was a huge shift.
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, my mom ends up remarrying a Jehovah's Witness, so I was like, whiplash, religious whiplash, and so I had a lot of I had a lot of people feeding me information about religion, but I never really had anyone sitting me down and saying, like, do you know who Christ is?
Yeah.
You know, do you know what he did? You know, and
do you remember vividly, like, when you came to Christ, like when you knew what this meant?
I think I started understanding what it meant in high school. So we finally moved back to Ohio, but we moved to Westerville, which is where I ended up finishing out my junior high and high school. And I went to church camp with some friends. And I went several times. We went to Central College Church right there in Westerville, and we would go to Minnesota. I went with one of my best friends to church camp, and it was the first time I saw a church van like have like contemporary Christian music. And I remember thinking, I mean, it might have even been a little bit on the heavy metal side, and I was like, this is crazy. Like,
this is allowed?
Yeah. Like, what? Where's the pipe organs? And where's the so that was very different. But then I remember them talking about it, and I remember my favorite part of church camp. I mean, we're running around, we're having shaving cream fights, and we're dressing up like our favorite rock and roll people. I mean, it was a youth group thing, and it was fun, and, you know, but then we had this moment where it was like 60 minutes of silence, and it was where you could take, you know, pen and paper if you wanted a journal, or you could do whatever you want, but they wanted us to go out and have 60 minutes of just God time. Mm. And I was like, it was the most awkward moment. I was awkward with silence anyhow. But that was really awkward. I was like, what do I say to him? How do I talk to him? I don't even know how to pray.
Yeah.
Even though I know how to pray properly, I don't understand this. But in that 60 minutes of silence, I felt something stirring in me mm-hmm. for the first time. And it was probably at that church camp where I like literally like started understanding, like, it's not about your parents, it's not about your family, it's not about what religion you're born into, it's not even about religion, you know, it's about your relationship with Christ. And that was just really, really, really eye-opening for me. Now, I didn't like miraculously get saved then. I might have prayed with everybody else, but I really truly was probably just going along because I didn't want to look like I stood out.
I have to pass these 60 yeah. minutes somehow.
Yeah.
I
gotta... But that seed was getting planted. Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I think youth group is so important to me. I couldn't wait for my girls to get older because I was like, I did kids' life here for a long time. And then I was like, man, I really wanted to, you know, youth group. But anyhow, so when I got to be a young adult, I did study with my stepdad, with the witnesses for a while, because I was seeking answers. And I'm like, he was a very, very, like, he knew his Bible in and out. And I will say, like, he changed my mom. He changed my mom's whole life. He was an amazing person that came into all of our lives. And even though I didn't live with my mom, he helped me do quite a bit of healing.
How was your relationship with your mom?
Now it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But
when you were living with your dad?
There were a lot. It was absent. Wow. I would say it's absent.
So you really never
saw. And she would send cards, but I think it didn't help too when they became witnesses. They no longer celebrated holidays. So like during Christmas and birthdays. Now, the funny thing is she would always send like a little something right before Christmas, but it was not a Christmas
yeah,
present.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, or around my birthday. And she would always defy him a little bit and send me a birthday card because she always called me her turkey. I was born the day before Thanksgiving that year. Sometimes it lands on Thanksgiving, yeah. But I was her turkey. And because despite her rageful side when we were little, she also had a very loving, gentle side. I just think she was so messed up for mm-hmm. so long. And I grew to understand that as mm-hmm. I became an adult. I think it's hard for, you know what, actually, I think I had a little bit of an understanding and insight about it when I was young, but I knew I had to get away from it. So I never hated her, but I definitely did not have a loving relationship with her for a long time. Yeah. But when I became a young adult, I did. I was able, you know, I got my own car. I was able to drive and visit. And so I would go visit and stay with them. My 20s was weird, you know, there was a lot of seeking going on, but nothing truly grounded. And then I met my first husband. I was married. I've been married twice, divorced twice.
Okay.
My first husband said he believed in God. He's like, but he kind of was more like, yeah, I'm spiritual. And to me, I couldn't really decipher the two. I'm like, yeah, he's open. And we even got married in a church, you know, it was a Methodist church in Lithopolis, Ohio. But very, very quickly, I mean, we were together almost 9 years, but shortly after we got married, he just declared he was going to be atheist.
Wow.
And so that's
a change.
Yeah, it did. It was a huge change. And again, I didn't go to church every Sunday, but it was a problem with me. I was like, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, that's fine if you want to feel that way, but I don't. I feel like there's something greater than myself, and that did end up being something that came between us.
Did you have any kids with
no,
him?
No.
So no, okay. But no. You do have kids, right? You have two daughters?
Yeah, I did not have my... Actually, when I was with my first husband, I was told I couldn't have kids. So I spent a great deal of time watching all my friends and family, you know, have kids. Yep. And we tried. I even did fertility drugs. I did injections the whole night. And his family...
You tried to have kids with him.
Okay. Yeah, and but it... God knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Because he changed a lot in our early 20s too. He was a funny guy and a lot of people loved him, but he didn't want to work. He'd get kicked out of this school, get kicked out of that school, and like I literally supported him for probably the whole 9 years we were together, and I loved his family. He loved my family. And I think that was really what kept us together for a while. But I left. I was not a Christian then. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the same views about marriage. The way I looked at it was he's this non-believing bad person who doesn't, you know, he could be kind of verbally insulting. Looking back, you know, I might have done things different with my Christian views now, but I didn't. And then I left. And then I met my second husband, who is the father of my children.
Okay.
Ironically, he and I were together for 6 years, and I had already told him I probably couldn't have any children. And then, bam, when I was 34, all of a sudden I find out I'm pregnant.
No way.
I was like, and that is what brought me to Christ. Because I had gone to different churches. In fact, my ex-husband and I were dating, and we were going to Vineyard. And I will say the Vineyard was probably one of the first churches where, and it was non-denominational, and I really, like, I would actually start having conversations with people about, you know, the story of the gospel, like, understanding it. I think I would always try to read the Bible, and I would start with Genesis, and you know, you get into...
Oh, you get to Leviticus.
You get to Leviticus, and you're just like, I'm lost.
It's over. It's over.
And, or I would read Revelation, and I'd be like, okay, now I'm so terrified. Yeah. Like, I don't know what's going on. And so I would really miss these books in the middle that were the most important books. And I had heard of the Gospels, but I didn't understand them. You know, I didn't understand, you know, who wrote them and why did they write them and what was the story. And so I was pregnant with this child, and I had what they call a threatened miscarriage. So one day I just start bleeding, and I'm like, oh my gosh, go to the hospital. And I'm praying in this room alone, and I'm begging God. I'm like, if you just let me keep this baby, I promise you, I will raise her in the church, and I will turn around and give her right back to you. And so, and I'll probably get a little choked up talking about it, because
I'm going to get choked up over
here. So then the doctor comes back in, and he says, she's got a healthy heartbeat, everything's fine, and, you know, you're going to have a baby. And I'm like, oh, crap, now I have to make good on my promise, like, right? So the funny thing, and a lot of people around LCC know this story, but maybe you don't. So prior to coming to LCC, I had visited the movie theater. And so I knew about Life Community. I knew about the group. I didn't even know their church name. You know, I'd just gone to the movie theater. Super nice people, but... Then I was very excited because I lived in the neighborhood across the street. I had a house back there, and I heard that Target was going to be moving to Hilliard. And I knew this warehouse had just come empty, and it was for sale. And I'm like, and then the rumors were flying that Target was going to be right here. And then all of a sudden I found out, no, it's going to be a church. And everybody is like in the news, like having this... like debate over this church, you know, that there were people in the, I guess, would city council or, you know, the Hilliard council, whatever, that, you know, they didn't want LCC to be here. And I remember Tom back then working his magic to get us here. But I remember being like really mad. I was like, no. So now fast forward like a year, now I know I'm having this baby and I've got to make this promise. And I didn't even stop to think what church. The Lord convicted me so much. He was like, you have to go to that church that you were so angry at. And so that's how I ended up here.
No way.
So I was pregnant with her, and I came here. And I was like, okay. And I didn't always, it wasn't always pretty. I didn't always do a good job, but I did keep my girls in the church. Mm-hmm. And I did keep them in a consistent church family because I knew that that was important. I knew I wanted to raise them in a manner that was different from how I had been raised. Now,
I was going to say, in the back of your mind, did you have your upbringing as raising your daughters?
1,000%.
Yeah. Did you ever find yourself falling back to how you were raised?
So yes. Well, yes and no. I had her, and then a couple years later, my second daughter comes along, which she was another divine miracle from God, because I was on 2 forms of birth control.
This whole story is a miracle, right?
And here. I was actually consulting with my doctor to get my tubes tied, because I had a lot of difficulty with my first daughter. I had a small heart attack right after she was born. I know, crazy stuff. And I had to have
just casually left that out.
Yeah, I know. So anyhow, I was shocked and surprised to have a second daughter, but things are going well. But my ex-husband and I, we are great friends. In fact, on my way here, I said, do I have permission to talk about you?
Because, oh, okay, cool.
He is my dearest friend. We stayed friends the whole time, but when we got together, neither one of us were Christians. And my struggles were different from his. His struggle, he had a lot of demons. And so he struggled off and on with substance abuse and sexual addictions, and that did ultimately end up destroying our marriage. Mm. Good news is, a couple years ago, he finally got truly saved, and then a year later, this past Easter, he was baptized.
Wow, so that's awesome.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
But we stayed friends the whole time, because I even though I knew that wasn't the way I wanted our lives to go, I knew I wanted my girls to have a good relationship with their father.
I was going to ask, he's involved in their life and everything?
And I didn't want them to have the same kind of, I knew it was going to be dysfunctional. We all have some kind of dysfunction.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted it to be as normal. And I also knew, you know what? I think in some level I knew someday, because I watched my own father struggle with his own demons, and he reconciled with his own issues. In fact, my father just got baptized like a year ago. It was cool. It was in Florida in the ocean. I didn't get to go, but
on the ocean. Nice.
Yeah, I know. But I know time heals a lot of wounds, and time has a way of, and maturity helps us recognize that we need God. You know, as we get older, if we're lucky, and we're, you know, we weren't exposed, or, you know, God wasn't presented to us when we're younger, I think we all have struggles in our adulthood that bring us to this point where we go, there has to be something better. So I think in the back of my mind, I always knew someday he would be the father that they wanted him to be. It was just not going to be now. And it was going to take time. And it did. And they're still working on that relationship, but they know their father. They did things with their father. And he's very kind, because he gives me tons of credit for that. But it's, you know, and I could sit here and gloat and say, yes, I was the model ex-wife. Like, people are always like, you should write a book on how to be a divorced couple. And
I mean, based off of this conversation, you do need to write a book.
But if I'm real with myself and I'm humble about it, it wasn't me, it was God. Mm. You know, God gave me the people that I needed to vent to maintain that humble nature.
Yeah.
He gave me friends that helped support me in the years that maybe he didn't help us. He gave me this church and this church body. And I can honestly say that there are many people in this church body that through those years, because I mentioned, you asked if I ever fell away from that. And I did. You know, when we got divorced, LCC wasn't shaming me. I was shaming myself. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started, I got really obsessed with working out, because that made me feel like I had control of something in my life. And it was kind of funny, because one of my closest friends, somebody I'd been in cell group with off and on for like 20 years, you know, it was like, hey, you're replacing church with the gym. And I'm like, no, this is a good thing. Like, I just wanted to go this Sunday because they had this special class this Sunday. But that became repetitive. And then for like about a couple years, we had kind of fallen away. Now, I still brought the girls, but I was kind of like just here in body.
Yeah.
And then we even moved away to Marion for a year because I had met someone and I thought, third time's a charm. Did not work out. And then I came, and I did, it was a very pride-swallowing moment in my life because I moved back to Hilliard. I wanted them to have as little disruption in their lives. I wanted them to be back in an area that was familiar. And then I was like, I know I need to get back into a church. And so we were sort of church hopping a little bit. And then it was my daughter, Autumn, my firstborn, who just like piped up one day in the back of the car and she said, Mom, these places are nice, but we need to go home to LCC.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, so we did. And I came back and we had only been gone a couple of years, but the church had gone through this huge transformation. Like Tom Burns was now like,
yeah.
And I remember I went to hear, I don't know if they were like, and Tom's going to come up here and speak. And then Tom Burns got up and I'm like, wait a minute.
Where's this guy?
Where's Bernardo?
Love you, Tom Burns.
Though. Yeah. Yes. Love you, Tom Burns. But it was just like, I was like, wow, in just a few years, like everything had changed, but it was still my home. And slowly but surely, like JR and Rebecca came alongside, you know, because I did Kids Life with JR before all this stuff happened. And, you know, he was able to speak truth to me. And friends that I had been in cell group never lost contact with me. It's kind of funny. I was like pulling away and going in different directions, but they would call me consistently. They were like, we're praying for you. And, you know, you're still part of this group. You may think you're not, but we think you are. And so it was like, I couldn't escape, but you know what? I needed that.
Yeah.
And that's when I actually like, I understood the whole iron sharpens iron sometimes. And sometimes the best friends aren't the ones that tell you what you need to hear or you want to hear. It's what you need to hear. And so I just, you know, I tried to do it my way and I realized my way's not working. My way is so full of self-inflicting bad choices that, you know, I need this. And so I just surrendered finally. And I remember it was probably the first time in my life I really truly surrendered.
Are you part of a small group?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I am.
Do you find it hard or easy to open up with them?
I find it easy.
Yeah?
I find it.
Do they have to, like, draw you out? Or you just...
No, there's a couple...
Based on this conversation, I feel like you're just an open book, you know?
You know, there was probably a time in my life where I wasn't as an open book, but I don't think that helps anybody. Mm-hmm. When you hide who you are or the sins of the past, it's nice to put those away, forgive yourself, and move forward. Mm-hmm. But it's also healing to let other people know, like, hey, you're not alone. Because I remember I was at LCC for a long time. And then once I got divorced and then I came back, I started finding out, oh, well, you grew up with a divorced family too. And it was kind of dysfunctional. And man, I thought you had the perfect life. Oh, wait a minute. Your dad's been married 3 times too. And, you know, oh, wow. And you suffered abuse and addictions and so I started realizing, like, okay, I'm not alone. These people that I thought were so perfect. Because when I was a child, that was what my mom, I think, struggled with. And that's, like, you showed up at Mass, and everybody was dressed to the nines, and everyone had perfect little lives, and all their kids were going to be the president of the United States someday. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just life was so fake.
Yeah.
But that fakeness, and I see it with, like, Facebook. Yeah. I love Facebook. I do. There was a moment when I like probably posted every second of my life on Facebook. And then I realized I gave it up for Lent 1 year. And then I realized, like,
I don't need to go back.
Yeah. This is a great thing. Yeah. But what I realized is, like, even like back then we paint these perfect little plastic pictures of our lives, and it's okay to a certain extent. Like it's okay, but it doesn't really help anyone who's suffering. Because they feel so far removed, like there's no way that God can save me because I'm so different from you because my life is so ugly and such a mess. But that's not helpful. That's not how we reach people. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't reach our teens by saying, well, you shouldn't have those thoughts or you shouldn't want to hang out with those people or like like, we can't shame them because they love this specific athlete or this specific star. That's not how we help them. We help them by, like, showing them, like, hey, you know what?
Example.
I was like you when I was your age. And I, you know, I went through this. And maybe it'll turn out different for you, but I can promise you there's a lot of people in similar situations where it didn't. And this is why. And this is why God sent Christ as an example for us. And this is, you know, in sharing the gospel with them in a way that's real and not like just some fake, non-applicable message to their lives, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have to show them that this is real. And being able to, the other thing I try to do with my life, and I try to be so like real with the teens, is because I almost lost my train of thought there.
That's okay.
That's okay. I want them to we always have this saying in youth group, you know, you have to make your faith your own, but you don't have to do it alone. And it can become this, it is our mantra. Like, we love that statement, and the kids can recite it back to you. But I want them to know that that's real. You're not at LCC. I mean, yes, your parents got you up this morning, and they made you come to church, and they probably drove you to youth group. But I want you to leave youth group knowing that you're a Christian because you have a relationship with God. It's not about your parents or your family. It's Amen. Between you and God. And that's, if somebody hadn't given that to me, I don't know if I would have really sought God's kingdom in these corner turns of my life like I did. Mm-hmm. And it also, you know, it's hard sometimes when you're a youth group leader because you want to reach the kids and you want them to be these like wonderful like examples of what a great Christian should be, you know, right now. But I have to remind myself, right now may not happen for 10 years or 15 years.
Yeah.
And I've even seen kids that I absolutely love and adore, and they're like my own family, who have gone away from their teachings and in Christ. But I really, truly, in the back of my heart, I know that that seed is there. And I pray every day that it starts stirring inside of them and they'll come back. Because I've seen it happen.
It will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What a journey.
Okay.
I got a couple rapid-fire questions
okay.
to ask you. To kind of... I feel like a lot of what we've talked about has been heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to end this with... a high.
Okay.
What is a high that has happened to you recently that you want to share? This is off script.
Oh, okay. So I went to Florida to visit my parents. So I was injured in a car crash not too long ago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Everybody knows.
You had like knee surgery.
Yeah. So, but I have been such a workaholic most of my life. And sometimes I think this is God's way of knocking me down a peg or two sometimes. But I did get to go on a vacation. And it Excellent. Was the most glorious 10 days of doing nothing but being in the sun.
I was going to ask, you just did nothing, right?
And yes, I did like water exercises every day, worked on my tan. I had a wonderful visit with my dad and my stepmom. And okay, biggest high. It's kind of heavy, but it's a high.
Okay.
My father, I went to church with my dad. Like I said, my dad got saved. He goes to church regularly now. He goes to a church that's... I walked in there and I felt like I was at LCC. It was like we were singing the same songs. But my dad and I were talking later, and I was telling him how proud I am that I was like, you know, there's something about when the father comes to Christ. And I said, I may be in my 50s. My sister, who's in her late 50s now, and she's kind of been agnostic / atheist for the last probably 30 years, is now talking about Christ. Like, wow. I can talk with her a little bit, and I'm like, Dad, you are the difference. My younger brother talks about, my nephew was going to church, you know, and I was like, when the father comes to Christ, it just has this impact. Same with my own girls. I've had them in church all this time, you know, and my dad paid me the highest compliment ever. He said, you were always trying to be like me. And I'm going to get a little teary-eyed talking about this. It's heavy, but it's a high, I promise you. He said, you always tried to have the same jobs that I had. You went into the military just like I did. He was like, you were always trying to be my mini me. He said, but I was never more proud of you than when you did things different from me and you raised your kids in the church.
Wow.
And he said that was my most proud. He's like, that's what made me the most proud is the parent. I always wished I was the parent that you have been. And
he just said that to you when you were down on vacation.
Yeah. Like we had this wonderful, wonderful visit. Like, and just to hear him say that that's what made him most proud of me, not all the other things that I always did, but just being a good parent. And that was such a compliment.
Wow.
So
that's a good high.
Yeah.
That's
was a huge high. So
I love it. Couple more rapid fire. You work the coffee bar here.
Love the coffee bar.
What's your go-to coffee order?
Whether you make it at home or order it. Honduran should be my favorite, but I absolutely love when they bring the Cuban Bustelo espresso in.
What?
Yes.
How do I not know about this?
Oh, yeah, because it's amazing. Marima makes it.
We bring it here?
She buys it herself. She brings it in, and she'll make, like, espresso for the day, but the way she does it back there... But you have to be careful. You can only have like a small cup.
Yes.
It's espresso.
Yes.
I have to remind people when they're like trying to fill up their coffee cup. I'm like, I promise you, you'll be. I even look for them sometimes out in the congregation later on. I'm like, are they jittery? Like,
yeah, but bouncing up and down.
It's the flavor though. She just. Okay. I think she makes it with some love too, so that All makes right. a difference. But that is my favorite.
All right. Next question. You have a night to yourself. What are you doing?
A night to myself. What am I doing?
Yeah, you got a night off.
I like to go play board games with my friends.
Okay.
If I,
what's the board game?
I don't know, any game. Like I just
just like any board game. Just...
My best friends, the Dan and Donna Masula, and they loved. I know the Masula girls come to our youth group. We go over to their house and we just play whatever games, and we just have a ton of fun.
I love it. What's your favorite restaurant?
First Watch. Yeah, I know it's a breakfast lunch place, but it's my favorite.
It is good. All right, last question.
Okay.
If you're going through the drive-thru and they get your order wrong, do you go back in?
Yes.
No hesitation, yes.
I'm polite about it, but I go back in.
Do you go through the line again, or do you like park your car and go into the like the?
I think
lobby?
I usually go in. Like I park my car and go in.
For no matter what, like, do you do the bag check? They give you the bag. Do you open the bag before you drive off?
I would like to say not 100%.
Okay.
Not every time.
So if you get all the way home and your order's wrong, you're going back.
It's sort of funny you bring that up because when I first got into the car crash, I had a little meltdown moment because they got my order wrong.
No way.
You're like, you're so kind and gentle. And I'm like, no, that
was a bad.
You're
weeping in the car because of.
No, I yelled. I was like, I want my cheeseburger. I just wanted a cheeseburger so bad. And I was like, I can't get up. I was in a wheelchair, couldn't even go to the bathroom by myself. And I was like, I just want a cheeseburger. And they forgot it. And I was so mad.
But you went back.
But I went, no.
Oh, you didn't go back that time?
I called the restaurant. The home.
That's even worse.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, no, I called the restaurant and the lady hung up on me 3 times. So then I called the home office. And they gave me a credit on my app. And so I was I was satisfied. But my girls sat me down there like, Mom, you need to get control. Like, you're having a moment. So I'm not perfect.
No one is.
Because I yelled it right when the mailman was delivering the mail. So, like, the next couple weeks later, I, like, went out and apologized to him. I was like.
Listen, I wasn't talking to you.
I was like, he laughed. He was like, you're really worried that I might have thought. I was like, yeah, you heard me like scream over a cheeseburger.
I love it.
But yeah.
All right. You heard it here. She will go back.
I will go back.
I won't, no matter what.
I'm always polite, though.
That's good. That's
Unless
good.
You hang up on me 3 times.
True. I love it. Well, Georgia, thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been awesome. I learned so much about you. And that's what I love about this. I learned so much about all of you. And it's such a joy. And yes, we can talk about heavy topics like we did today, mm-hmm. but man, God is good, and he works mm-hmm. even when it seems like he's not. So,
and the beautiful thing is it doesn't always have to be heavy. Cell groups are fun, light, airy.
True, absolutely.
They take away the heavy sometimes.
Sometimes you got to talk about the heavy stuff, though, in order to get to that good stuff. I love it.
All
thanks again.
Okay.
Thanks for taking time. And for those listening, we'll catch you on the next Conversation in Community.